Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit ByteRadio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Bob Gardner. We will be talking about his work as well as his book, Built for Freedom, Adventures Through Stress, Anxiety, Depression, Addiction, Trauma, Pain, and Our Body's Innate Ability to Leave Them All Behind. The topic of mental health seems to be front and center as rates of burnout, anxiety, depression, and even suicide are at record levels according to data from the National Institute of Health. In our current health and recovery paradigm, we often treat symptoms without looking deeper into the root causes of mental health struggles. As a result, many of us have resigned ourselves to struggling and being unhappy as, quote, just part of the human experience. But what if it isn't? Bob Gardner's revolutionary approach offers a fresh perspective on living in a way that makes trauma disappear for good. Bob's unique system focuses on working with your body to produce joy and well-being on autopilot no matter what has happened in your past. When that happens, trauma and pain disappear on their own, leaving a person with all of the wisdom and none of the suffering. For the past 15 years, Bob has been incorporating multiple tools and knowledge gained from his years of martial arts, breathwork, functional psychology, deep tissue release, and numerous other healing modalities to help thousands of people permanently put an end to depression, anxiety, and addiction by identifying and healing what's at the core of these issues. For more information, you can visit Bob's website, which is builtforfreedom.org. And with that, I'd like to welcome Bob to the show. Good day, Bob.
Good day to you, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And I've been looking forward to our conversation today because, you know, your approach is, I think, would be a very welcomed, you know, kind of approach for many people who are kind of suffering. So let's start with, you know, in the beginning of your book, you talk about your what your life was like, you know, before the sudden shift into your current journey. So would you mind sharing just a little bit about, you know, that particular time period, you know, what was going on and how it was that you set sail on this new path?
Yeah, I basically was the guy that had screwed just about everything up. So that's how it started. You know, on the outside, I was pretty charismatic. You know, I tried to keep everything together. I was good in academics. I didn't have a traumatic childhood. But on the inside, I felt miserable. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt like there was something broken inside of me, that I didn't belong, that I'd never measure up. All of those types of very, very common things that people feel. And it used to eat at me on the inside so much that early on in my teen years, I found ways of coping through pornography, later on through food, and then later on through drugs and other types of things to just help me escape the sort of nightmare in my head. I had grown up in a really religious family, and I don't have any beef against religion, but I had made that religion into a reason to shame myself and to guilt myself and to feel miserable about who I was a lot. And it ended up coming to a head when my wife could no longer handle the way I was. I was angry. I would lash out at the kids. You know, what is it when a 30-something-year-old man is trying to make his son feel stupid so that he feels smart. You know, that, and so she was ready to leave. And she told me so. And that was the night that I was looking down the sort of barrel of this gun going, look, I have felt so depressed, suicidal, anxious, you know, bipolar mood swings left and right for the bulk of my life. And I'm many times walking the streets at night, hoping to be hit by a bus or something, because I just didn't want to continue living. And yet, at the same time, I didn't have the courage to try a suicide attempt, which I also felt like meant that there was something wrong with me, because I didn't even have the courage to attempt suicide. And now, all of a sudden, I was going to be having to live that way alone, without my wife, without my kids coming and running up and saying, Daddy, when I got home. And there was something inside me that just screamed out loud and was like, no, this can't be it. This can't be, oh, no, this is the way life is. There has to be a way to graduate from this struggle-bound life into a life where it's beautiful. And so I sort of threw away all the stuff that I had learned. I had been through 12-step programs. I had been through a lot of online programs, both anonymous and not anonymous programs. I had been to counselors. I'd been to energy healers. I had trained in a lot of different things. And I had read books and all of these different things. And I had learned a lot of stuff. I had some beautiful experiences, but none of it had moved the baseline of my life from the life of struggle and feeling miserable to one where I was fine and life was beautiful and happy. And so I threw that stuff away and I went back to the drawing board and I said, okay, there has to be a different way. Let me start with what I know. And I started really examining concepts around addiction and really examining what depression was and anxiety was, and discovered that in the end it was all rooted in my body here and now. And if I could change my body here and now, I could change how I felt. And if I could train my body here and now, then it would automatically produce better feelings in the future. And then as I started doing that, all the addiction, the depression, the anxiety, the trauma, all that stuff just started going away on its own.
Wow. Yeah, because I've had, you know, so many different types of guests on the show with their approaches to coping with or potentially eliminating, you know, addictive behaviors or even PTSD and that kind of thing. And I don't really, I mean, some of them kind of touch on body, you know, kind of approach, you know, the body's reaction to those types of scenarios. But yours, I think, for me, from what I've read, has been the most body-centric, I guess, a way of putting it, way to release, you know, these, you know, destructive behaviors and move toward a healthy approach.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, the verbiage has been in the world for a long time, that people talk about the body-mind connection. It's not like a revolutionary idea that your body and mind are connected. People have noticed this for a long time. But there was nobody giving me the answer as to exactly how that connection was made. What is it that connects them? And how can I start to influence that connection so that my body and mind feel better? Instead of just like, well, they're connected. Hopefully that goes away. So for me, it became an avenue of exploration, mainly I think because I was a martial artist. I was running a martial arts school. I was heavily involved in a lot of these physical activities anyway, and so I had already developed some awareness of these body processes happening, and so it gave me an easy place to start. And then as I discovered the connection, that's when things really took off. Because your mind is essentially, like if you ask yourself, where do your thoughts come from? If you look biologically at the question, because the feeling for most people is your thoughts just kind of spring out of nowhere. You know, maybe you're thinking about something, but then you're like, oh, I just had a thought. It just kind of arises out of nothing. But if you look at the biological sequence, whether you're looking at functional brain scans or anything else, there is a host of body processes that happen before a thought arises in the mind. and we're just not aware of them. And those body processes actually form your thoughts. So much so that you could almost describe your thoughts and your emotions as reactions to how your body is feeling, rather than as really dealing with the world. Because if you think about it, your brain's not in contact with the outside world. It doesn't know what's going on. I mean, unless you're in currently in brain surgery, which you're, in case you're probably not listening to the show. But, like, your brain's not in contact with the outside world, so it doesn't know what's going on. So it's in this little black box, and it's receiving information from all corners. But all of that information is hitting the body first. It's hitting your ears and your eyes and your tongue and your nose and your skin. It's hitting the electromagnetic field of your heart. It's hitting all of these different stuff. And then all of the body processes that are going on inside the body are also sending information to the brain. And the brain is like using all that data to make an experience. Well, if your body feels miserable, even if the outside world is beautiful, it has to go through the misery of your body before it hits your brain. So why not learn to get rid of the misery of the body so that even if it's miserable on the outside, that has to go through something beautiful before it hits the brain. Then your experience of life becomes something that you've influenced that's beautiful no matter what's happening on the outside.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this, I mean, the idea of starting with the body senses as being the impetus for thoughts, which, you know, I mean, it for many types of therapy or kind of self-help types of ideas, you know, they tend to start with the idea of the mind and then kind of, you know, trying to find the cause, the root cause. I mean, there's just so many ways of, you know, having the mind be the focus first,
yeah,
versus the body.
Which seems intuitive, right? I mean, it's not like that's like a dumb idea. Like, you have a thought, why wouldn't you look at your thought? You know?
Exactly.
It took a little bit for me to like go back and go like, what if my intuitive sense of things is wrong? And I had to really eat some crow on that one and recognize, oh, what if it really is wrong? And I've been wrong about this the whole time. This was never a moral issue. This was never an issue about me being broken. This was legitimately just me operating the machinery backwards.
Yeah, exactly. So now, well, first of all, you, in your book, you indicate that your book is not a self-help book, but it's an adventure, like the subtitle suggested. And in fact, all of the chapters are called adventures. So tell us about kind of why you, position things that way when writing the book.
That's a great question. I love that question, actually. Thank you. The data on learning seems to indicate that a human being learns. We can learn through fear. We can learn through pain. We can learn through those methods, no doubt. But that humans seem to learn, they're like the best as a long-term situation when there's an element of challenge and when there's an element of play. And adventure seems to carry that, both of that, that it's going to be a little bit of adventure. There's going to be some risks and some dangers and some challenge, but it's a positive thing. It's playful. It's let's go explore something. Children are doing this all the time, and they're some of the fastest learners on the planet. They're soaking everything up, and it's all in exploration and play. And if pain is involved, they'll learn quickly there too. But the bulk of their learning comes from their interest, their exploration, their play. And so much of the mental health struggles and all the therapies and training paint this to be this big, heavy problem that people are dealing with. So here you are, you're in a world where you're struggling with depression and anxiety or addiction like I was or OCD or bipolar mood swings or any of these other things, and you're in this place where it's already heavy, and then someone comes to you and is like, oh my gosh, all right, we need to go do the work. We need to do some shadow work, or we need to do some darkness, and we need to dig in, and we need to get serious about this. And what you've done is handicapped the person. Where when I turned around, I was like, what if So what if the way we're treating the situation as a problem is actually training us to continue to have problems? And what if instead of treating it like an emergency, we just treated it like, yeah, this is something that's happening right now. Cool. How can I play my way to happiness? Because then when the healing methods and when the process and approach is playful, then along the way, you're training your body to solve its problems through joy instead of pain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that does kind of set the conditions, you know, for what one reads and how one kind of puts into practice those things, looking at it as an adventure. And I enjoy, you know, seeing that approach. And you're right, you know, we humans, you know, are attracted to the idea of adventure and, you know, and that positive approach to learning and living life. So now in your book, you know, throughout your book, you have poems every now and then. And I enjoyed them. And in particular, I liked really the first one best, the one called Another Traveler. Where, you know, talks about an individual face.
I can recite it if you'd like.
Yes. Yeah, why don't you do that? I would like that.
This is a poem I wrote when I was in graduate school. Now, let's paint the scene, shall we? I'm in graduate school. I'm in Seattle. I'm suicidal. I'm depressed. And I'm in a studio all day long. I'm in graduate school for painting and drawing. So basically, it's a lot of navel gazing. And... you know, pretending that what I'm doing, which is essentially smearing colored mud around on a bit of cloth, is somehow important to the world and whatnot. And every week, professors are coming in and demanding to know, what am I thinking? What am I considering? Why is this painting significant? Why is it not? And asking all of these justifications for it when I was just trying to keep my head above water. And I had been reading Robert Frost's poem, of the road less traveled, around two roads diverged in a yellow wood, right? And his poem was the sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler, long I stood and looked toward one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just the fair, and so on, right? And so it ends with this whole thought of like, I took the road less traveled, and that's made all the difference. But I was feeling so stuck with everything that had been laid before me, that there was one path that I could make to handle my depression and my addiction and stuff. There was one path I could follow. And then there was another path that was laid out that was like, or just suffer. And it was this binary decision. Two roads, that's it. So this poem I wrote, two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I took neither, but rather stood. Stood to gaze and watch and learn of each road's mean, if soft or stern. Stood to ask if inwardly either road called out to me, but neither did. So I remained at that one place where two paths came. At last, or at length, this thought came inwardly that neither road was meant for me. Both were made for others' feet, which mine would never find as sweet. I rose to this forbidding voice and set anew to make my choice, then forged a path alone.
Yep, that one, what really struck me about that one was the, you know, idea of how many times people just feel frozen, you know, and that, you know, they're kind of looking, you know, at, you know, challenges and possible courses of action, and neither of them really kind of resonate, you know, so you just stay there, you know, you stay in that one spot. And what I liked about this one was recognizing that, you know, other people's course of action may not be right for you. And what one needs to do is find out what's right for themselves and forge their own path.
Yep. In the end, that seems to be what has to be done, even if you start on someone else's path. The last length of it is always you got to be your own anyway.
Exactly. So now, You're talking about, we're talking about trauma, and one of the things that maybe you can address is that, you know, so many times when people are working with trauma and, you know, with ways to overcome it, that a lot of times it can be, you know, trauma based in childhood or maybe even adulthood. But
yep.
Is it important with the way that you approach, you know, your style, your system, is it important to really get to the actual cause? Because a lot of people don't like the idea of reliving it. You know, I mean, you know, you go through it and you just relive it again and again. And to me, it just seems like that maybe just reinforces the trauma.
Many, many times it reinforces the trauma. Sometimes it's helpful. So I will never, I can never say that, like, with a uniformity, that in every single case, all the time, it will be unhelpful. Because you'll always find an exception to that. But what I would say is, let's start from what the heck trauma is. It's a buzzword now. So people use it and they talk about their trauma. And so in, you know, good old fashioned, like Bodhidharma did to his students, I go, okay, cool. Well, then bring your trauma out and let me fix it. At which point they'll look at me and go, well, I don't know where it is. What do you mean bring it out? That's the problem. That's why people can't solve it. Because it's not something tangible. It's not something your average Joe on the street or Jane has any way to access. So we start with a basic question. When you say you have trauma, what exactly are you referring to? And specifically, how do you know you have trauma? Because, like, everybody has memories, but some people say that some of them are traumatic, right? So how would you know that a memory is traumatic? And then the answer starts to come back. I don't know. I just, like, it feels horrible. Okay, cool. When you say it feels horrible, what does that mean? What feels horrible? What is the feeling? Get more specific about it. And as you continue going down that line of questioning, what you notice is that you have to refer to your body at some point. That the only reason and only way you know you have trauma is that your body is producing a sensation that you find unpleasant when you think about it or when something happens. So we're back to the body. Now, that is happening not in the past, but in the present moment. So in this moment, your body is producing an unpleasant sensation. So it doesn't matter what happened in the past. If you can get back to your body in this moment, to its sensations, and then you can start to relax and release those sensations, even while the memory is going on, you've legitimately given information to your brain not only to feel better now, but that when that memory comes up, you have another option of how to feel. And if you do that well enough, or, repeatedly enough, because sometimes it takes a little bit of repetition, but if you do that well enough, then the brain goes, oh, wait, this is a way better option, and it'll start to choose it automatically. Then someone brings up what used to be a trigger, or it used to be a traumatic event, where before you used to have to set boundaries and tell people, no, you can't talk about this, or I can't be around that. All of a sudden, you notice that your body doesn't react. And later on, you look back and you're like, holy cow, I reacted to that differently. I used to freak out about that kind of thing. And then you've legitimately changed your body's assessment of its environment, of its thoughts, and of what's going on. And so now you've gotten rid of a trigger. You've gotten rid of the thing. Trauma is not a thing. It has never been found in a laboratory anywhere on a planet. It is a label we put on a series of sensations that a person is having in a given moment that they find unpleasant. That's it. Everybody on the street can work with that. Everybody on the street can work with, well, what sensations am I having? Okay, I might not be able to get rid of an itch because I can't scratch that area on my back or something, but I can start to work with, well, how has my breathing changed? How has my posture changed? How have the tensions in my body changed? Well, how are my eyes darting around? Or what else is happening to my neck tense or my jaw clenched? Those are things I can change. And even if it goes back, I can change them again. And suddenly now I'm in the process of training my body to find joy and happiness in response to its environment, where before, the only reason it's responding negatively is because I accidentally trained it the other way.
Yeah. Okay, so it's basically changing the body's reaction to a particular trigger, well, for lack of a better word, a trigger, changing the body's reaction to something that created
stimulus, right?
Okay. So now, are there non-verbal pieces connected with trauma that, you know, one should look at?
Yes. So, like, let's continue to where we started. Okay. We start talking about what is trauma, and we're looking at memories, and we're looking at events, and we're looking at things that can be articulated in words. Then we go further, and they say, well, my body feels this, that, or the other. Oh, okay. Now we're talking about something that's quasi-verbal, meaning they can say, I feel depressed, or I feel anxious, or I feel scared. That's almost verbal. But then you go further, and now you're describing physical sensations like tightness here or pain there or something. And then pretty soon, you're back to neurological firings. These are habitual responses. Like, are at every level of the human system, there are cognitive processes going on, not just in the nervous system, but in every single cell of the body. Because nerve cells are essentially like any other cell. They just happen to operate at a faster time scale, at a faster speed, and they can create different changes in the system. So every cell in the body has a level of intelligence and is making decisions within its own little frame of reference, right, about what to eat, what not to eat, what processes to do. And so those are nonverbal. And that's where it starts. Some stimulus hits the body, and it's at the cellular level that there is a recognition of that stimulus. Because even these cells, individual cells, have memory, have intelligence, and have the ability to learn. It's even been shown in research studies that they have associative memory, meaning a series of stimulation or stimuli produce a reflex result inside the human body. Now, our consciousness, how we look at the world, is about anywhere from a half second to 10 seconds slower than the actual planetary happenings. This is the problem if you want to operate in the world as it is. You're 10 seconds behind. But even a half second behind is a huge issue. So what does that mean then in terms of like what's going on to make it so that humans can walk? And what the body has created is a reflex system that operates up to 5 times faster than the normal cognitive processing. So where your conscious experience is lagging behind what's going on, your body is actually in operation in a closer step with reality. So in that time, you can have 4 or 5 reflex responses to an environmental cue based on memory that you're never even aware of. That is nonverbal. And that requires dealing directly with the body and only with the body, but keeping the conscious mind aware of what's happening so that the changes become trained new, so to speak.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that does, open up the possibility of being able to change, to affect that automatic response, to be able to, because, we create, the body creates, so many, automatic responses just for the sake of being, of not overloading the mind. I mean, we don't have to think about breathing. We just breathe.
Right.
So.
And that breathing changes based on what your body's doing. So if you're running, the breathing changes. Like, you're not sitting there going like, oh, I should probably change my breath now. No, it just happens.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, we're about halfway through the show, Bob, so I'm going to take just a quick 90-second break. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the breathing aspect, okay?
Okay.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder, we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to the more than 1,700 shows we have aired during the past 13 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, photography products and services, calendars, and greeting cards. There is also a link to our account at Fine Art America where you can purchase items such as mugs, prints, pillows, and more. Our show is available as a free podcast on multiple platforms such as iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and Audible, with icons to each platform on our homepage. We are also available on social media platforms such as Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Threads. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my special guest is Bob Gardner, and we're talking about his work as well as his book, Built for Freedom, Adventures Through Stress, Anxiety, Depression, Addiction, Trauma, Pain, and Our Body's Innate Ability to Leave Them All Behind. And again, for more information, you can visit Bob's website, which is builtforfreedom.org. Again, that website is builtforfreedom.org. Okay, with that, we're back, Bob.
Okay.
Okay, great. So we're talking about breathing, and as I was reading your book, you indicate that there is a kind of a three-minute breath exercise that people can utilize to kind of do a real quick reset, I guess, is the way to put it. So
yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that particular exercise and maybe walk us through it?
Yeah. And also, it doesn't have to be 3 minutes. What I found is 3 minutes is long enough to hold your brain in a spot where it stops being so squirrely. So it can be less. Like if you only got time for five breaths is better than none. So those of you listening, you're like, 3 minutes. I don't know if I can do that for 3 minutes. Cool. Then do it for 2 minutes and 59 seconds. Like it's your life, folks. So,
right. Okay. The key is to just get your mind in a certain spot.
Yeah, so what we're doing with this type of breathing is we're amping up the sympathetic nervous system. We're essentially putting the body into a stressed state on purpose while it's in contact with something stressful, meaning you've been walking through life and something's building up and you're stressed about this, that, or the other. You know, dad just got put into the ER because he's had some symptoms of a stroke, or so you just got news that your bank account got drained or whatever else is happening, and you find yourself already in a stressed state, but you're so used to handling that by worrying. So here we go. Cool. Let's go back down to the breath. How do you breathe when you're stressed? Typically, people breathe through their mouths very often. It's rare that they breathe in through their nose, but they breathe in through their mouth. They're usually breathing pretty high in their chest, and it's producing other kinds of hormones. And when they breathe lower in their chest, it's activating the sympathetic side of the nerve chain. You're getting adrenaline running through the system. And they're associating all of these internal feelings with the thing that's happening. That's not going to help you survive the thing that's happening long term. It's not going to help you have a better relationship to it. Every time you think of it in the future, it may develop a little bit of stress. We don't need that on your body. So what I'm doing is having people deliberately put themselves into a stressed state but focusing so much on the body that the brain eventually kind of remembers, oh, hey, this is just a physical feeling, and I'm okay, actually, in the middle of it. And by the end of it, you feel so good that you're like, not only did I survive, but I actually feel great at the end of it, to the point where everything you've associated with that stress state also starts to feel better. Like, oh, okay, yes, I still have to handle the news about Dad in the hospital, or I've still got to go out and find work, or still got to do something, but I feel okay. And when you feel okay, that means that your creativity is now at your disposal instead of waiting in the wings for the panic to stop. That means that your ability to have your intuition on point, to see and capture connections that might be there or opportunities that might be in front of you is there. It means that your physical strength and your stamina increase. It means that your intelligence rises. It means that your immune system comes back online in a bigger way. All of these things happen when your body's in a better state. Isn't that the way we want to solve our problems anyway? Who was the one that taught us that to solve problems we need to feel bad about them? That's just society. It's no one person's fault. It just happened. Let's turn that around. And so this process is simple. I based it on some of Wim Hof's work with breathing. His is a kind of heavy breathing. And so while I teach people a variety of different ways to use their breath for different things in the system, depending on what's going on, this one's a pretty kind of like catch-all multi-tool thing for a lot of people. Not everybody loves it because not everybody likes to breathe heavy. But essentially, you're breathing really fast. You're taking a full breath in, and then you're just relaxing. So you're not actually squeezing the full breath out. You're just going breathing in, and then just letting it drop, right? And you're going to do that for 3 minutes. So it'll sound like if I try to suck in through my nose so that I'm activating the sort of parasympathetic side of the nervous system initially anyway, but a lot of people can't suck in through their nose at that speed. So get the air in through your mouth if you need to. It's not a big deal for only a couple minutes. So you get the air in, and then you relax. You do that for 3 minutes. It'll sound like this, kind of like. And I'm thinking about expand the belly, expand the chest, let go. Expand the belly, expand the chest, let go. And so it's like, it's got this kind of like 1-2-3 cadence in my brain. Now, some people go slower. That's okay. Like if you have a hard time getting the air in, the key is get the air in 100% in. Don't do it 60-70% in just to try and keep up. Do 100% in and then let go. And that may mean that it's a little slower, or if you can go faster, you go faster. But you just kind of keep it as fast as you can while you can still do that pace. Okay?
Okay.
Then at the end, we'll do some breath holds. But why don't I just walk you through it, and everybody who's listening, you can stop what you're doing. Don't drive any heavy machinery, or don't be swimming while you're doing this. But if you're listening and you want to, like, take 5 minutes to do this, I call this the breath switch because it's just a switch that we're flipping in the brain to turn things around, right? And there's a bunch of switches that I've developed over time to do stuff. So this is the breath switch, okay? So you ready, Robert?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yep,
here we go. So we start. 3 minutes. I'm starting the timer. It's going. Breathe in. So you keep the breath going. Remember, expand the belly, the chest, and then let go. Belly, chest, let go. It's okay to move your body and twist and shift positions so that you get a bigger breath. Don't feel like you have to hold a static position. Obviously, it's best if you're sitting down or lying down while you're doing this. If you find yourself getting lightheaded, that's normal. We are hyperventilating. That's what we're doing. So you may feel that it's harder to get a breath in as you continue going. That's okay. That's normal. You just... And you can go faster if you want. You can go a little bit slower if you need to. There's no one of those that is more right than the other as long as you're getting 100% in and let go, and you're just pushing it on the edge of your own discomfort. Pay attention as you're doing it to the sensations in your body, to the sensations in your hands and your feet, to your legs, to the feeling around your lips, to what's going on behind your eyes, to what it feels like with the air in your lungs. You pay attention to the sensations of your body. You're almost halfway there. And so that means we just got half left. So you still keep going. Drive it further. Develop the determination to push it to the end. It's only a little bit less than a minute and a half left. So keep going. Really feel the lungs. Really feel the belly. Really feel every part of it. We are deliberately trying to stress you out because we'll know that in the end something else will happen, and I'll explain what's happening later on in terms of the body balancing this out. This is a magic switch. If you can hold it for just 1 minute more, 1 minute left, that's all we're doing. Go a little bit faster now. Keep pushing it. Again, you don't have to go that pace. You can go whatever pace feels like it, but just keep pushing it. Keep going. Really feel the air coming into the body. Really feel everything that's going on. Notice the sensations. Don't get lost in your thoughts. Notice everything else that's been happening. If you do have a thought come, that's great. Attach it to this feeling and bring it into the sensation. Let your body work it out while you're breathing. 30 seconds left. 20 seconds left. Beat it up a little more. Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. Now breathe all the way in. One slow one. Let go. A second slow one. Let go. One third and final slow one. Let go, and then once you're done letting go, hold on empty. Hold on empty as long as you can. As long as you can, noticing the feelings in the body. Now we're allowing the body to normalize. We've shifted the carbon dioxide-oxygen ratio in the system, and it's trying to figure out what's going on. Your body's now starting to use the nitric oxide and the oxygen that's in the system. So now fresh oxygen is being taken up by the blood cells. Can you feel that? Can you feel your heart beating? Can you feel your tingles in your hands, your feet, wherever it is, lightheaded, whatever it is, just be with it. When you feel the hunger, the need to breathe, just give it a few more seconds, 10 more seconds. You have plenty of oxygen there. It's only your mind, it's only your freakouts that are telling you you don't have enough. So give it 10 more seconds, then take a full breath in when you're ready, and then hold on full, and then gently squeeze all the muscles from the shoulders down. I don't want you squeezing your neck and head. We don't need to add blood pressure to your brain. Just all the muscles from the shoulders down to your feet. Just squeeze, 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 squeeze. And then when you're done, after about 10, 15 seconds, you let go. And you lie back down. Or sit back in your chair. Keep your eyes closed. Continue to notice the sensations in your body. Notice the deep, deep rhythms of life happening beneath your skin. People all over the world are not in touch with the life inside themselves long enough or often enough to really recognize that all this stuff on the outside isn't who they are. And so they feel a big emptiness or a void on the inside of themselves. And what they do is they seek out experiences, whether that's addictive behaviors, drugs, alcohol, pornography, sex, whatever it is, whether that's scrolling through Facebook or YouTube, whether it's entertainment, jokes, information, angry outbursts, adventures, you name it. They seek out all these things. And if you really look at what's happening when they're doing these things, their mind is getting grabbed by something out of its habitual nightmare. And they're engaging in something that is attempting to wake up their innards to the point where they can get back in touch with their inner life. That's all they're trying to do. It's to remember who they really are. And wow. Doing processes that allow you to feel that allows them to kind of let go of their worry for a second, which is why they can distract themselves with Ellen DeGeneres, you know, scaring people on YouTube, laugh, and feel better about their life. It's because some part of them woke up again. They got back in touch with their life.
Yeah. Wow. That is very, thank you for doing that. You know, I appreciate it. And then it's one of the, a switch that I'm going to employ as well. And I have to admit that, as you were getting down to the last, 30 seconds, I felt like I was on a bench press with a trainer. You can do it. You can do it. One more time. One more rep. And you got it.
It does take, you know, the reason that I run retreats and that I do a lot of this stuff in person is because there's, you can get a person to do more and discover what they're capable of more a lot of times when they don't have to lead it themselves. Because when you have to lead it yourself, your own self-doubt and your own habitual laziness gets a bigger voice than if a trainer's yelling in your face. There's a real benefit to having somebody else lead you through it, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So now, you as you mentioned, you lead retreats. So what other ways do you offer your services to individuals?
So I run a podcast, and so that's totally free. My aim is to make everything that I do 100% free to anybody who needs it. We're not there yet. We started a nonprofit to take donations. And if we get enough people just offering even $10 a month, then all of a sudden, you know, we can make even a retreat, a full-fledged retreat for multiple days where we're diving deep into all these past problems for people free. So we do the retreat, 5 days intensive, do online programs of varying lengths. One's a three-week course called Choose Your Own Emotion. Another one's the Freedom Formula. It takes about 3 months to go through, or 12 weeks. Just to go through that, and it includes Choose Your Own Emotion plus a bunch of other things. And then there's the book that I've written, Built for Freedom. I'm in the process of writing a second book. I'm just doing everything that I know how to do to try and spread the word that there's nothing wrong with anybody. We just need to learn how to operate the machinery.
That's good. That's great. So would you mind, in your book, you really go through a lot of case stories. There's a lot of stories about individuals who have come to you and how your process has helped them. Can you maybe share a couple, maybe your most memorable types of interactions with individuals who have, you know, come in one way and left another?
Gosh, there's so many. Both in the book and not in the book. because we've had people come for everything, like legitimately everything, from parents who used to hire hitmen on each other to like abuse and sexual abuse to addictions and to even chronic pain and stuff. So I'll share two. One, Amber, she's in chapter, I think, six or venture number six or seven, right? And she was dealing with a lot. She had grown up in not a horrible household, but she had, you know, developed some sort of self-doubt growing up in a big way. I don't know that you would call that trauma, but what had happened is she had been bitten by a tick, developed Lyme disease, had had like cysts and all kinds of health issues growing up. And so she ended up with all of these different autoimmune diseases, like 30 different co-infections and stuff, from cardiac inflammation, and she was third spacing fluid, and you know, just, she described her pain as razor blades going up and down her bones day in and day out. She was in that space long enough that they went to the doctor. She had spent months in a Mexican hospital getting IVs. She'd done everything, you know, from the holistic side, the alternative medicine side, all the way to the regular medicine side. And nothing was really changing. You know, so many times they were like, you're not going to live. And she somehow managed to live. So she ended up on opioids with a raging opioid addiction. She didn't want to get on because of the fear of it, but then, you know, was convinced by the doctor to do it, you know, wink, wink, so that her and her husband could get back together. And so, you know, happily coerced to do it for the sake of her family, she got onto it, and then within a short amount of time, was starting to use more than her prescription, then was starting to procure more, and then was meeting people in parking lots at like 3 a.m., you know, to buy the rest of their prescription so that she could use for the rest of the month. And it was really getting out of hand. She was draining her life savings, and it scared her so much that she kind of went cold turkey off of it on her own. Like she turned herself, well, not on her own, she turned herself in, so to speak, went to a doc and got on a different drug to help her kind of deal with it. and kind of weaned herself off. And so she wasn't on it, and she had been a year free of pain meds when we met. And her husband was so excited. Like, yeah, it's been a year. And in her mind, she's like, if I have to live another year like this, I'm going to die. Still the pain is there all the time. I met her at a business meeting. She wanted help with her kind of worries and concerns about how she couldn't make things work in terms of business. So basically limiting beliefs, the kinds of things that you would see, you know, around that people go around and look for help for. But as she was talking to me, I just noticed this massive tension start to build up inside of her body. After watching this happen with so many people and training in it, I could see this buildup of tension around stuff. And so this requires some drastic intervention. So I just asked her, you know, can I thump you on the back? She doesn't remember me asking her, to be honest. And so whenever she tells the story, she's like, apparently I gave permission, but I don't remember it. And so I had her breathe in, and as she breathed out, I whacked her in the back, and I had her do it a second time, a little harder, and a third time, and I let her a good deep thump. Now, these are not like, oh, I'm just going to punch you in the back and hit you really hard. These are like, you have to learn how to deliver a thump so that it becomes more like a percussive massage, and so that it loosens things, and it's not just hitting somebody, because otherwise people tense up more. So that last time, she paused, she froze, her breath froze, she turns around, wild eyes, she looks at me, I go, breathe. She inhales, like she's going to swing at me, and unfortunately, then I had to go because my wife needed help. She's just like, who is this crazy wackadoodle guy that just whacked me in the back when I was talking about all my struggles? But then she texted me at 1 a.m. She said she'd been sitting in a chair for hours. She only moved her hand. And it was just enough to text me saying, like, this is the first time in 7 years that my body has been without pain. What did you do?
Wow.
What is this thing? And how can I learn more? It was that fast that you could reset the brain, because pain is made not in the body, but it's made in the brain. So to give the brain a chance to recalibrate itself in such an intense, it's intense, no doubt. And yet the results were so quick. And since then, she had some swelling up and down here and there, but the pain hasn't returned. It's been years. And every time she tells the story, women in the audience are like, can you hit me next? And I'm like, there's probably some liability involved in this. I probably ought to. But it's that quick. It's that quick.
Yeah.
That the body can, just like you touch a fire, it's not like you need to touch it three times before you realize it's hot and you stop reaching out.
Right.
Just once. But your body can change so fast. The depression, the anxiety, all that stuff can change. So then we enter Lee. Lee was abused by his mother, sexually, physically, emotionally, from the time he was born until he was 16. And she kicked him out of the house. She used to quote scripture at him while abusing him, saying he should honor his father and mother, you know, because then his days would be long on the earth and whatnot. And so he had this really messed up, warped view of this kid. He's 6'10", so it's not like he got a lot of snuggles because he was a bigger kid, too. So he often felt like he didn't belong. So many struggles that went on. So another family kind of adopted him, and so they took him in, and he stayed with them. And then for the next 30, 40 years, he was going to counselors and therapists and talking through his story and rehashing his trauma and helping them, like, understand what was going on so that they could offer suggestions about how to look at it differently or how to cope with it differently. He certified in narrative theory with the Allender Center and suicide prevention, was on a national speaking circuit talking to tens of thousands of people about the effects of childhood sexual abuse. And these people would come to him, and all of them had the sense of gratitude that they weren't alone, but the sense of hopelessness that there's really, we were dealt about raw hand, and that's all that we can do about it. Life dealt us this, and that's it. So when he found myself, and he heard me talking about what if you don't have to tell your story again? What if this isn't about you being morally bankrupt or there's something wrong with you? What if this is just a skill? Freedom is a skill, not a pill. He was skeptical but hopeful. And so he started doing some of the online programs and working through things and getting
coaching, I would push him over the phone. And then after a month or two, he came to one of our retreats. And in 3 days' time, all of the stuff, I mean, his story is in the first chapter of the book, the first adventure of the book. All of this stuff around his mom evaporated. He went home, like, since then, and this isn't in the book, I don't think. He used to have sleep apnea. That went away. He's down 130 pounds. His blood pressure normalized. His hair grew darker. He feels like he's 35. And he's, in his mind, he's like, wow, what else is possible? It's not rocket science. It's not magic. It's not voodoo. It's not mysticism. It's just that your body responds to the conditioning of your mind. So if you believe in the impossibility of something, your body will create the impossibility of it while it's trying to fix it. It'll be like, well, we need to fix this in a way that it breaks. Because it's obeying your mind. And if you can give your mind enough tangible physiological feedback to prove it wrong, it will abandon all hope of its old story and latch on to the lifeboat that you're giving it and build a new life.
Wow. That is something. And, I do remember reading Lee's story and, it seems like he had tried everything, under the sun to try and get things straight. And I believe, wasn't he also doing counseling or coaching or something to that effect?
He was. He worked in Christian ministries as a Christian counselor, and he was working with other people and a lot of youth at the time. Age 18 to 25, who had rough childhoods, and so he was trying to at least give people the leg up that he didn't feel he got. So he spent his whole life trying to help people.
Yeah.
Without getting help himself.
Well, that's something. Well, Bob, this has really been an enjoyable time spent with you. I really thank you for your time and for doing that breathing switch for us. Now, if people wanted to get in touch with you or listen to your podcast, how would they go about doing that?
You go to thefreedomspecialist.com, and there should be links for everything on that website. So the podcast, place to schedule a call if you want to talk with one of our team, look at coming to one of our retreats. We are raising money now with the nonprofit. I'll be putting a button on there where people can donate. But we're raising money now, so we've been able to lower the cost of these retreats a little bit, and the aim is to lower it all the way so that anybody can come. Because I would rather spend my life helping people than anything else. So.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, well, thank you for your time again, Bob. I look forward to keeping in touch with you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Bob Gardner, and we've been talking about his book, Breaking Free, Hope for Freedom, excuse me. You can find out more by visiting either his website, which is thefreedomspecialist.com. Let me get that back in there 1 second. Sorry, Bob. I had a little blanking out here. Now, buildforfreedom.org is for the
book. If you want to buy an online digital version of the book for $5, that's builtforfreedom.org. If you want to go look at all of our other stuff, it's thefreedomspecialist.com.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Everyone, thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth's Children's Corner Show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadioMe, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's B-I-T-E-R-A-D-I-O.me,
And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.